This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We still don't know the scale of today's disaster in China, with thousands reported dead in an earthquake. What happened there and what to do about it will become clearer over the next few days. The scale of the disaster in Myanmar is now only coming into focus, and what to do about it becomes more contentious every day. State television today put the number killed by the floods and winds of this month's cyclone at just under 32,000, with almost 30,000 more listed as missing. The United Nations estimates the death toll at somewhere between 62,000 and 100,000. Many more remain at risk of starvation and disease, and the military government of Myanmar continues to restrict relief supplies from the outside world, foreign aid workers to help with distribution, and outside military units that could provide logistical support, including trucks and helicopters and medicine. Food, water, mosquito nets, other supplies are piling up in the capital, Yangon, and in neighboring countries, while hundreds of thousands need help in the Irrawaddy Delta. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon spoke today of his immense frustration at the unacceptably slow distribution of aid. Politicians and government officials in Britain and France called for airdrops of relief with or without permission of the government, and an editorial in Time magazine argued for the use of force if necessary. We'll talk about coercive humanitarian relief in just a moment. We'll also hear from an official of the UN World Food Program and from a Burmese dissident. Later on the opinion page, an argument that many students should reconsider plans to go to college. But first, humanitarian relief in Myanmar. If you've worked in disaster relief, should Myanmar be forced to accept aid by airdrop or by gunpoint? Tell us your story. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And you can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. We'll begin with Times Managing Editor Ramesh Ratnasar. He wrote the article, Is It Time to Invade Burma? And joins us now from our bureau in New York. Nice to have you back on the program today.
Thank you.
And why would force be justified in Burma?
Well, any unilateral action of any kind is a last resort, obviously, in any situation like this. I think the ideal situation would be for the Burmese government to acknowledge the scope of this disaster and to accept the offers of assistance that many around the world, including the United States, have made. If they do not accept those offers, and so far they haven't shown much willingness to do so, I think other steps need to be considered. And there are other tools short of a military intervention that can be tried and should be tried. But the point is, there isn't a whole lot of time to waste.
And if you were going to organize a military intervention of some sort, there's less time to waste. These things take time.
Right. And I mean, there are different ways of doing it. Obviously, Foreign Minister Kouchner of France has called for unilateral airdrops without the government's permission if they don't grant it. I think the problem is, to some extent, if you do drop relief supplies and food into these areas, if you don't have people on the ground who can administer the supplies, who can deliver them to the right people, who can show people how to use the medicines, that there's great potential for misuse, for abuse, for hoarding. So these things do require a certain amount of logistical preparation, and it would require some time. But the United States and other militaries around the world have experience in this most recently and most effectively in 2004 in responding to the tsunami. So we do know how to do this, and the United States has offered the Burmese government a sort of face-saving way in which they could accept assistance but still remain in control of it. And we haven't yet seen whether they are willing to accept it.
Well, just the first American flight arrived in Myanmar today, and aid, we're told, is beginning to trickle in. But the numbers of aid workers needed to distribute this food and medicine and other supplies, they're not being let in. Nor is the United States military, with its considerable assets, being let in. In part because, well, the regime there fears that, this could get out of control. They're worried about staying in power.
That's right, and that's why many people who know Burma better than I do say that even if the regime makes symbolic gestures and allows, as they did today, allowed the C-130 to come into Burma and deliver some food and supplies, that they aren't prepared to accept the kind of intervention that would be required to really deliver relief to the many people who are at stake. And so far, we're hearing that only one-tenth of those in need are being serviced at the moment, and that's just unacceptable.
Well, it seems to me that in some ways you're talking about the next disaster, and not necessarily Myanmar. You're suggesting that if there is more than one tool available, if there is the threat of some form of forcible humanitarian intervention around, governments might be more responsive from the get-go.
Well, I think we have to begin to consider what options are available in situations like this. United Nations Security Council Resolution 1674 calls on member governments, says that member governments have the responsibility to protect populations from genocide, war crimes, ethnic cleansing, and crimes against humanity. Now, it does not refer to a situation, directly refer to a situation such as the one we have today, where you have a natural disaster, people at risk, and a government not supplying its own people with the relief necessary. There is some speculation, there is some debate about whether what the Burmese government is currently doing constitutes a crime against humanity. And if so, according to the UN Security Council resolution, the world has a responsibility to intervene in some way to protect those at risk.
The world is not noted for rapid and quick mobilization.
That is true. But again, in 2004, when you had a much bigger disaster on a much wider scale throughout the region after the tsunami, what you saw was the governments in the region immediately accept and ask for help and assistance from other countries around the world. And within 48 hours, you had U.S. assets, U.S. military assets, and the assets of countries around the world delivering aid to the affected population. And as Jan Egeland, who was the UN's humanitarian assistance coordinator at that time, has said, because of that rapid response, there were no lives lost that were lost during the tsunami almost entirely were from the actual event. But the kinds of things that often happen in these sorts of situations, which are the outbreak of disease, starvation, all those things were averted because there was a very quick response by the world community within 48 hours to that disaster.
Well, you talked about U.S. military assets, and in order to rush things to Myanmar, again, the United States is far and away the country best equipped to do that sort of thing. And you can think of more than a few places, including Myanmar, that would be suspicious of U.S. military forces, of the Marines landing on the ground.
That's absolutely correct. And that is one of the things that would have to be taken into account if any operation like this were to be considered. Ideally, as many people say, the U.S. would give support to other countries who might be deemed more acceptable to the Burmese government to actually carry out these missions. But there are lots of things that the United States can provide short of putting its own troops on the ground. There's logistical support, there's equipment, there are helicopters. And again, the U.S. has offered the Burmese government the right to sit in on any mission, to have Burmese officials on helicopters, on any ships that are going into the area, that we would go in at day and leave at night. So there are things that can be done that stop short of a full-fledged landing of thousands of Marines on Burmese soil.
Yet, again, the regime would be suspicious that this is – you're talking about regime change. You're not talking about humanitarian aid.
I think that would be the perception, and that is the problem, and that's why I think the government has been so slow to accept assistance of any kind. And it's not just military assistance. They're not allowing relief workers. They're not issuing visas to relief workers. I think we are faced with a set of bad options here, which is I think the government simply will not countenance the idea of a robust intervention from any outsiders. And because of that, I think, we could be faced with a really epic disaster unless something else happens.
We're talking with Ramesh Ratnasar, the deputy managing editor for Time magazine, about his article, Is It Time to Invade Burma? If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And again, it is relatively easy to provide fly-in supplies of mounting this as some sort of, as you say, there's problems with airdropping of supplies, but European countries, though they have some military assets, don't have anywhere near the kind of assets the United States does. The United States is obviously stretched a little thin already in terms of military assets in use, and therefore the United States government has shown very little interest in participating in this. As Secretary of Defense Gates said last week, that he could see no way that he would try to deliver supplies of aid without the permission of the Myanmar government.
I think that's true. I think the administration does not have a great deal of interest in intervening unilaterally without some kind of assurance from the Burmese government that that aid will be welcomed. Again, I think there's a point past which responsible governments around the world have to say this is a crisis in which millions of people are at risk and something can be done. These things are not unprecedented. We actually know how to respond. We know how to deliver aid in situations like this. And if you can do something, what is stopping us from doing it? I think this is a debate that is going to be taking place and is already taking place, not just in Washington, but at the UN, in European capitals. And again, French Foreign Minister Kouchner has been out front on this. But I think more people are going to join the chorus if you don't see more action and more movement from the Burmese government.
And we have just a couple of seconds before the break. But if this is, as you suggested, might be a war crime of a sort, at that point, would it be justified to intervene and take the Myanmar military out of the way if it objects?
Well, I think it's highly complicated, and you have to think about what the consequences would be regionally, diplomatically, if you were to take any kind of hostile action against the Burmese military. What we're talking about here is not necessarily a hostile intervention. What the United States has offered is a purely humanitarian assistance delivered by our military with the cooperation of the Burmese government. It does not have to be something that leads to regime change.
Ramesh Ratnasar, stay with us if you would. We're going to talk more about the thousands dead and after the cyclone in Myanmar and many, many more at risk and what to do with a reluctant government that doesn't want to accept outside help. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We've been talking about the trickle of outside humanitarian aid going to Myanmar after a deadly cyclone killed thousands and stranded many more. In a moment, we'll speak with a spokesperson from the World Food Program. If you've ever worked in disaster relief, we want to hear from you. Should Myanmar be forced to accept aid by airdrop? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org, and you can read what other listeners have to say on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Joining us now from her office in New York is Bettina Luscher. She's chief spokesperson for the World Food Program, and thanks very much for talking with us today.
Thank you so much, Neil, for having me.
And we've heard a trickle of relief supplies being able to get in. Is that an accurate portrayal?
Yes, it has gotten better in the last few days, but still, compared to what we think we should be doing, we really are at a trickle. But the good news is we are talking to the governments. Those contacts are going well. And we are just hoping that we can do more. But it's the people need it urgently, and we just have to, with all the UN organizations, NGOs, and the international community, much more to help those hundreds of thousands who need help so desperately.
And it's not just the supplies. It's the people needed to help distribute those supplies, the logistical structure, that sort of thing.
It's everything. It's people. It's warehouses, storage tents for our food. It's generators. And some of that stuff has been coming in, but much more is needed down there. For example, we estimate that we should move some 375 tons of food per day to the worst affected areas. And at the moment, we are just doing less than 20% of that. So that's crucially important that we can do more. Also, when you look, for example, at the weather situation, the weather is going to get worse. We are now more than a week after this disaster. People don't have houses. They don't have shelter. They don't have plastic tarps. They don't have food. They don't have any sanitation. It's crucially important that aid gets to them.
And if the government continues to be reluctant to let aid and those people necessary to distribute the aid come into the country, what do you do?
Well, our strategy is just to keep on talking and sending more planes. You know, we as an aid organization stay out of some of the political discussions that have been going on, because for us the number one priority is to get food in and other supplies. And it has been better. I mean, there was a problem last week that some of from two planes, aid supplies were impounded. That situation has been resolved. So that's good. But if you think about it, we think that we have less than 10% of the staff, material, general logistics that's needed to do this operation. And it's also, if you compare it to the tsunami operation, there within a few days we had eight flights coming in every hour. And I was, for example, in the tsunami region in Banda Aceh, where helicopters took off every couple of minutes with rice and other food supplies to the people. Again, the good news is that we are in good contact. We have been on the ground in Myanmar since 1994. We have well-established communication lines with them. But, you know, our message to the government is help us help you, because the people of Myanmar are really in dire straits now.
The United Nations Secretary General today said that he was immensely frustrated, what he called the unacceptably slow distribution of aid, and said he'd been unable to get the head general of Burma on the phone and had to send him a letter, which seems, ridiculously slow under these circumstances.
Well, I think, you know, we have from the World Food Program, we have people on the ground who are talking to counterparts on several levels with the Myanmar government, and that's our strategy, to just keep on talking and really making clear that this is not a political operation. We are humanitarians. We bring food. That's all we do, and we do it really well. We do it in 80 countries around the world. We do it in many complicated, difficult areas of the world. We have the logistical knowledge and can pull this off, but we need to have more access. And again, there are positive signs, so we keep on talking with them, and they've been cooperating, for example, at the airports with the unloading of our planes. But as of now, we've had WFP has chartered seven planes that have gone in, plus we've put food and other supplies on two others. And obviously, you know, we would like to do more.
Thanks very much for being with us, and good luck to you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Bettina Luscher, Chief Spokesperson for the World Food Program, with us from her office in New York. Still with us, the Deputy Managing Editor for Time Magazine, author of Is It Time to Invade Burma, Ramesh Ratnasar. And let's get a caller on the line. Karen joins us. Karen calling from Waterloo in Iowa.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
My point is that my son is just leaving on his second deployment to the Persian Gulf. He was first in Afghanistan. Where is any military effort going to come from? We're short now.
Ramesh Ratnasar, I think there are, more than a dozen U.S. naval vessels in the area that are rushing to be in position. But other than that?
Well, as I understand it, I think Admiral Keating today said that there are at least a dozen, maybe more, helicopters available that could ferry in supplies to the Delta. It would depend on what kind of operation we were talking about. I mean, in the case of the tsunami, it involved about 15,000 American troops operating in different capacities. I don't know what would be required in Burma, but there are assets available in the region that could, within, I think, a moment's notice, be deployed to help the people in this area.
But I think, as in the tsunami case, you're talking about mostly naval and Air Force personnel.
I think that's right. I mean, I think some civil affairs people would probably be needed if the government were to accept their presence. I think most likely, if you're going to get any cooperation from the Burmese government, I think they would probably agree to air and naval assets.
I think what Karen is worried about is what if the Burmese government doesn't agree?
There's a difference between force and cooperation.
Well, hopefully, again, I think the ideally you don't want an American face on this for lots of reasons. If we can convince the other neighboring countries in the region, who all have an interest in averting a humanitarian disaster in Burma, to cooperate and to contribute their own assets, their own people. I think that ideally would be better than, I agree, than sending thousands of American troops who we don't have to spare and who would possibly create in the minds of the Burmese government more paranoia than they already have.
Yet when you conclude your piece, Ramesh, by saying, as the response to the tsunami proved, the world's capacity for mercy is limitless, but we still haven't figured out when to give war a chance, the idea that people think you're talking about force is hard to escape here.
Well, I guess it depends on what you define as force. I mean, if any intervention without that were to come without the permission of the Burmese government would be seen by the government and by the military as a hostile action, which is why I argue in the piece that this has to be thought through very carefully. The consequences of doing something could be great in the amount of help you could provide to people who are in great risk. On the other hand, you have to think about what the reaction would be and, in the long run, how you manage the fallout and the possible response from the Burmese authorities.
From a military mom's point of view, I am absolutely, thoroughly, totally for the assistance if it's accepted. I don't want to propagate any kind of suffering in a country that is already filled with it. However, we still have people in Kosovo. We have people in Afghanistan. We have people in the Gulf, Navy, and we have people on the ground, not only National Guard, Marines, and Army, but also from the other forces. And I just have to say, there's a difference between cooperation and force. And when it comes to force, you really are talking about putting a whole different face on the issue. Thank you so much.
And thank you for the call, Karen. Let's go now to Peter. Peter with us from Fort Lauderdale.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead, please.
Hi. Unfortunately, I have a very pessimistic view of the situation because in light of the high priority that the military junta in Myanmar gave to their own election this past weekend over the ongoing emergency operations.
A constitutional referendum that would allow them to stay into power, yes.
Yes, and in light of the fact that the generals would stamp their own individual names on some of the delivery supplies for the purposes of media and PR and whatnot, it's very clear to me that the reason why even these non-political operations that are simply involved with delivering food and medical supplies are being denied is because the junta is strictly concerned with their own self-preservation and they're concerned with negative PR, and they don't want the world to see, or perhaps even more importantly, they don't want their own local population to see that the junta is incapable and quite honestly unwilling to take the necessary steps to help its own population.
So you're arguing bring in the aid at gunpoint?
Absolutely. And not a U.S. force, because I agree that the U.S. military is currently strapped, unfortunately, I might add. But I would suggest a U.N., you know, a world cooperative U.N. force for maximum effectiveness at this point, because I don't see any other option for the hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of people that are at risk in this country where their own government is not willing to allow outside help strictly for the fear of negative PR, it seems.
I wonder, Ramesh Ratnasar, I think broadly Peter agrees with some of your points, but nevertheless, the prospect if this goes wrong, first of all, it would take a long time to get the UN to set up such a force and staff it and arrange it and organize it and deliver it. Nevertheless, even if that were possible in time enough to intervene in a good fashion, things go wrong. What if the Burmese started shooting at these aircraft?
Well, you're right. I mean, there are risks in mounting any operation along these lines. Any humanitarian intervention can go wrong, even those mounted with the best of intentions. The case in point for the United States is the 1993 mission to Somalia, which we began as a humanitarian mission to deliver food aid and ended up embroiling the United States in guerrilla combat in Mogadishu. I agree with you. I mean, there are huge risks involved in doing anything like this, and I think an intervention should not be undertaken lightly, which is why I think there are steps that the world can take short of military action that have not been tried. the Security Council could...
What role does China have to play in this? Because I know that China is somewhat considered an ally of the Burmese government, and I wonder if the Chinese have been persuaded to put a very strong pressure from their side of this on the Burmese government to allow things to go forward.
I think that's the first step. I think the Chinese have the most influence of any of the actors in this over the junta, and I think the first step would be to try to get the Chinese to use their influence to convince the Burmese that they need to accept the outside help. If that doesn't happen, I think there are some other steps that the Security Council could take, such as freezing assets or even threatening the arrest of individual members of the regime. But I think military action, there's no question, because of the risks involved, has to be a last resort.
Peter, thanks very much for the call.
You're welcome.
We're talking with Ramesh Ratnasar of the Deputy Managing Editor of Time Magazine about his op-ed, Is It Time to Invade Burma? You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And joining us now is Ko Pai, a political activist from Myanmar who fled here to the U.S. 7 years ago as a result of persecution. He has a family in the city of Rangoon, which was hit by Cyclone Nargis, and joins us now by phone from his office in Anaheim, California. Nice to have you with us today.
Thanks for having me, Neil.
And Adam, as you're reading and hearing the news about the reluctance of the government in Myanmar to accept aid or accept logistical help and support being offered by other countries in the world, do you think that there's point to airdropping supplies if the government does not accept it?
It is necessary for the international community to do whatever it takes for the help to be able to reach to the people of Burma. The people of Burma are in desperate need of help in any form, and they will welcome help from in any form.
They'll welcome help in any form, even if it's forced through against the government's wishes.
That is correct. First of all, let me stress the fact that the government of Burma is not a legitimate government. They came to power by killing thousands of people in 1988, and the international community actually does not really even have to be asking for permission or working with the government of the Burma, because it's not a legitimate government. And, you know, if they do whatever it takes to be able to reach out to Burma, the people of Burma will be forever grateful.
Some of the difficulties we've talked about at this point, but nevertheless, your urgency then is for the deliveries of supplies as quickly as possible by hook or by crook.
That is correct.
And I wonder, have you been able to reach your family members?
Not at all. Not at all. And I've been worried sick ever since the cyclone knocked out all the phone lines and internet connections. I haven't been able to reach any of my families or friends back in Burma.
And have you been able to find... So you don't know what happened to them?
I don't know. But my wife was able to reach her family back in Burma.
And are they okay?
And they are okay physically, but meaning that they did not sustain any personal injury. But they had an extensive damage to the building, and the entire roof was blown off by the wind, and they had to move in with one of their family members.
And at this point, I presume you could not get a visa to return to your country.
That's another big problem. The government of Burma, it's a major impediment to all these rescue efforts by the Burmese community or by international community. A lot of the Burmese people that I know that are living in the United States have applied for the visa through the Burmese embassy in the Washington D.C. and all the visas are being put on hold on purpose.
Ko Pai, we wish your family the best of luck. We hope they made it.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Ko Pai, a Burmese exile living in Anaheim, California, affiliated with Friends of Free Burma, and he joined us today by phone from his office in Anaheim. And Ramesh Ratnasar, before we let you go, with this crisis building, you can hear the frustration not just from the United Nations Secretary General today, but as you mentioned, from officials in France particularly, and some politicians in Britain as well. As these issues are discussed, the urgency of this, talks at the UN really take a lot of time.
They do, and the window here, most people estimate, is somewhere between 10 days and 2 weeks. After a disaster like this, you have about that much time to get relief to the people who need help before much greater problems start to develop, like cholera and other diseases. So
we're almost at 10 days now.
We are almost at 10 days. I mean, the window is just about closed. There isn't a lot of time to talk. And if something is going to be done and the Burmese government does not relent in the next couple of days, I think you're going to hear the calls for some kind of unilateral action start to mount throughout the world.
Ramesh Ratnasar, thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you, Neil.
Ramesh Ratnasar, Deputy Managing Editor of Time Magazine, with us from our bureau in New York. Coming up, the Talk of the Nation opinion page. Career counselor Marty Nemko has some unusual advice for people going to college. Reconsider. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.